The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, today on Talk is Jericho, I got my buddy Randy Bly, the singer of Lamb of God and the author of the riveting new book, Dark Days. He's got an incredible story. He spent 5 weeks in a Czechoslovakian prison, indicted on manslaughter charges before being acquitted. We'll talk all about that. We'll talk Lamb of God's new album, Sturm und Drang. We'll talk about the prison experience, what he ate, what he wore, the inhumane conditions that he faced in the shower, lots and lots of happy stuff, sad stuff, laughter, sadness. This is one of my favorite episodes I've ever done, one of my favorite interviews I've ever done with Randy Bly. But before we get to that, it's time to talk about some Nature Box. I bet you Randy would have loved to have some Nature Box when he was in the cell in Czechoslovakia, eating gruel every meal. That's not what we're going to do here in Nature Box. You want looking for something healthy, a healthy snack, a great snack. Nature Box is the way to go if you're looking for over 100 healthier snack options. That's how big the Nature Box pantry is. They literally have hundreds of snacks to schwoz from. Gluten-free snacks, vegan snacks, low-fat snacks, no sugar-added snacks, no artificial flavor snacks, no color snacks, no high-fructose corn syrup snacks. Wow, that's quite a spiel. They also got dried fruit, granola options. They got different popcorn flavors. They got about any kind of nut you can think of. Sometimes you feel like a nut, but sometimes you don't. I love them coconut cashews. They're my favorite. They got the sour cream and onion almonds. They got praline pumpkin seeds. They got so much good tasty morsels. They got sweet snacks as well, like the whole wheat chocolate chip cookie bites, mini Belgian waffles. My stomach is grumbling just thinking about it. Two great ways to satisfy your sweet tooth without the guilt of the vending machine. So you got to try Nature Box for yourself. That's why I'm going to hook you up with some free Nature Box snacks. That's right, I said free, and I do mean free. All you got to do, naturebox.com/Jericho. You get the most popular snacks delivered right to your front door for free if you live in the United States, and you get that free box. You hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. Let me know your fave. I want to hear what you got to say. You know which ones I like. Which ones do you like? I know you like Nature Box, and you get some free snacks now by going to naturebox.com/Jericho. Once again, naturebox.com/Jericho. Satisfy your hunger. Eat Nature Box now.
Talk is Jericho, baby.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride with some heavy Fozzy. This is Brides of Fire on TIJ.
Believe a bleed.
All right, a little Brides of Fire for you because it's a heavy tune in honor of my friend Randy Bly, who's here in his heavy band Lamb of God, and his heavy, heavy book Dark Days has come out. It's all about his experiences being imprisoned in a Czechoslovakian prison for 5 weeks. It's an unbelievable story. He wrote all about it in the book Dark Days. We're going to talk about it with Randy coming up here. It's a great read. I want you to check it out, even if you know who Randy is or not. It's riveting. He got off a plane getting ready for a concert with Lamb of God, got shuttled right away to jail, and was in there for 37 days, all right? Was messed with the system. Like I said, you just have to read this book, and you're going to really be amazed by this riveting story that Randy's got to tell you. He's doing a book tour as well, and there's still a few dates left. If you want to meet Randy, get your book signed, you can catch him at today in New York City at the Book Review. That's on Wednesday, July 15th. He'll be at the Urban Farmhouse in Richmond, Virginia on July 17th. That's his hometown. Finally, he'll be at Book Soup in Hollywood, California this Sunday, the 19th. Plus, Randy's band, Lime of God. I think they're called Lamb of God. Well, the Lime of God tastes a little sweeter. It sounds like a Greek dinner. I will have the Lime of God, please. They're dropping the new album, Lamb of God, is next Friday, July 24th. They're kicking off a tour next Friday as well. So much stuff coming up on the way with Randy. And before we get started, I want to tell you a little about Tough Enough, Episode 4. I had a great time this week. I think it was the best show that we've done so far. I know a lot of you are confused at first as what exactly type of show this is. Is it a reality show? Is it a live show? Is it a training show? It's a little bit of everything. Obviously, the old Tough Enough shows were all reality, all training in the ring. We're trying to flesh out the experiences of a WWE superstar prospect. They're learning lessons every week about humility and how to cut a promo and strength and determination and courage and all that sort of stuff. But I think this week, episode 4, we really came together with the absolute best episode yet. I took them to the improv to try and help them do promos. Some of them did great. Mata, excellent promo. Josh did a great promo. Patrick did a great promo. And Gigi did an excellent promo as well. But Sarah and ZZ still had a lot to give. I got in both of their faces. And what you didn't see is I got in ZZ's face the same way I got into Sarah's face. And I told him, I was like, listen, you don't have the fire. You need to change gears. And he was looking at me. I said, do you want to punch me in the face? And he said, yeah, but your face is too pretty. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Good, good stuff. Did the same thing to Sarah Lee, and you can see how she did not give me what I was looking for. She fired up a little bit, but there's still some trepidation, and I started to wonder, can she even really do this? Does she have the fire to do this? Can she switch gears and become this character? I didn't think she could. Lo and behold, with the prompting of Paige as well, this week on Tough Enough, she fired up at the end and got a standing ovation, and once again, out of the box, bottom three, and I think she's actually become probably the biggest baby face on the show so far. She did an amazing, amazing job with that promo. I mean, she could still amp it up some more, but I think she finally got sick. Enough is enough. I'm not going to take it anymore, and fired up when she had to and saved herself, just like she did a couple weeks ago. So she does have that in her. We want to see more of that. I think it was good for Tanner to be in the bottom three because he was getting cocky, riding on the coattails, doing the same thing every week and blending into the crowd, which is the worst thing you can do. So there's still a lot of people that need to kind of embrace that and do more work. I think Amanda needs to get more into it. I think it's the same thing. Georgia did a great promo, but I think she still needs to show a little bit more versatility as well. So it's definitely shaping up. We're getting this thing rolling, and we're really on a good steam here, on a good stream of killer situations. The personalities are coming out. And I think I'm really enjoying the show. Highest rating of the year so far for episode 3. Hopefully we'll get the same thing with episode 4. We shall find that out just momentarily. And it's funny, when we went to the improv this week, I came out and I was trying to fool them into thinking they'd have to do stand-up comedy. So I went and told some jokes. I told some WWE jokes. I opened up with, what did John Cena say to the Japanese sushi chef? You can't sashimi. Huh? Anyone? I said, why does Vince McMahon have to go to heaven? Because he's got no chance in hell. Is this thing on? And then I said, how many Vince McMahons does it take to screw in a light bulb? I said, none. Light bulb screwed light bulb. How are ya? I told Vince that, and he was looking at me. He's like, I've never screwed anyone in my life. And I was like, it's a little bit of Montreal screw job humor for you. And then I did one more WWE joke where I said, what did CM Punk say to Adam Copeland when Adam Copeland made a pass at him? I'm straight, Edge. you got to get a kick out of yourself, or what chance do you have, right? And then I went with a cheap heel Orlando Magic joke where I said, what do you call a member of the Orlando Magic with an NBA championship ring? A thief! Oh! And yeah, good stuff, good stuff, because the Orlando Magic have never won a championship ring. So you see what I did there? Yeah, exactly. Once again, like I said on Tough Enough, I am a comedic genius. Exactly. And I'm also having a great time with this podcast. And tonight's guest, like I said, Randy Bly, or this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are when you're listening to it, one of my favorite guests with the riveting, riveting story of his imprisonment unfairly in Czechoslovakia. He's going to tell us all about it. But first, I want to tell you, he mentions in the book how much he valued having a razor to shave his beard because he only got to shave like once a week. I bet you he would have been begging for a DollarShaveClub.com membership. I mean, that's the great thing about Dollar Shave Club. You choose your delivery option. If they could have delivered it to Pankrats, the Czechoslovakian prison that he was in, he would have been the king of the castle with a smooth, silky face. He would have chosen his Razor option and got it shipped right to his jail cell for just a few bucks a month. Unfortunately, he didn't know about that. Now he does. And now you know there's great quality Razors available at a budget-friendly price. That's what I'm talking about. Really easy to sign up. Only took me a couple minutes. You go to DollarShaveClub.com, pick one of three great razors, the two-blade Humble Twin, the four-blade 4X, or the six-blade Executive. The Executive is the way to go if you want to treat yourself. It's got six stainless steel blades, a 90-degree pivot head, and an aloe strip, and it won't break your bank either. And then after you schwoz your razor, you go ahead and select your delivery choice. Like I said, you can choose monthly if you shave a lot, or every other month if you aren't a frequent shaver, okay? Dollar Shave Club gives you the handle, and then you just sit back and wait for the new blades to arrive, and they will like clockwork. You won't ever have to think about buying razors again. Even better, you'll never have to drive to a store and drop a serious wad of cash to get some fancy razors that you don't really need. It's the best thing of all. You'll never have to shave with another dull blade again. So what are you waiting for? Do what millions of genius guys and girls have already done. Join DollarShaveClub.com. No sign-up fee. No long-term commitment. Just great razor blades for a few bucks a month. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/Jericho. You shave time. You shave money. You shave us, Y2J. You go to DollarShaveClub.com/Jericho, and you do it today.
Check out this week's episode of The Big Podcast with Shaq as the Diesel catches up with the one and only Kim Kardashian.
Well, you look happy. Kanye look happy. Congratulations on the baby. Hope he's a young, healthy, beautiful, sexy baby boy, just like your husband.
Kim, your family's been very, very publicly in the spotlight with everything going on around Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, you know what? It's definitely an adjustment. I think what we've learned in life through everything that we've been through is happiness is everything. And we're just really happy that she can be herself.
The Big Podcast with Shaq.
That's me. It's up right now at podcastone.com.
That's podcastone.com.
How are we doing so far? Are you all having a good time? We are just getting started!
Talk is Jericho.
All right, so we're in this kind of fancy pants hotel with Randy Bly.
Yes.
Finally figured out how to say your last name properly.
Amazing.
You walked in here and this room has a guitar in it.
Has a guitar, all sorts of like...
It's a pencil sharpener.
Yeah, pencil sharpener.
And I thought it
very
was
very writerly.
I thought it was your guitar. You're like, no, that's the guitar that was actually in the room.
Yeah, it's kind of, this is a hip hotel.
Hip hotel. I don't know if you really fit here. Yeah. But we're here because you have a giant press tour over the next few days for your brand new book that is coming out, is about to be out, depending when you listen to this, called Dark Days.
Yeah.
Which is just an incredible book, but I mean... It's cool that you're out here to do the press because this, we were just talking about it, it's so important to do press when you release a product now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of interesting. I think a guy like me and a guy like you coming from the wrestling background and doing promos and all that stuff. I mean, of course, wrestling promos are over the top. as I've read about your promo development in your books, which I did my homework. You know.
Thank you.
I think coming from the music industry background, and we were talking about Duff earlier, we kind of might have a leg up on someone who's writing a book for the first time who doesn't live in the entertainment world. Mm. You know what I mean? Because we're used to like, okay, check this out, you know?
Right.
And it's very odd for me because I'm not a salesman at times. I'm kind of like, when my band started, it was like, okay, this is what we do. If you don't like it, then tough, mm-hmm. you know? And I've kind of had to learn to pull back some of that, you know, middle finger to everyone, I suppose, you know, and be like, you might want to check this out. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you're right too, especially in this day and age too, you know, and it's just the world that we live in. We're kind of in this middle stage where, okay, we grew up with albums and cassettes and CDs and DVDs and books. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of switching over to where it's becoming all digital. Mm-hmm. And in about 10 years, all of this will kind of be irrelevant. But we're in this kind of one foot in the past, one foot in the future, which is hard as an artist because we still want to promote these products that we're putting out and this great pieces of work. Mm-hmm. But it's easy and easier for people to just get them for free.
Right. You know, like we have a record coming out 10 days after my book that comes out the 24th. And our bass player sent us an email and someone sent him a photo. I don't know if they knew this person or whatever. Like, actually, oh, we went to this record label party and saw this record laying out and it's not out yet. And I stole it and the leak is going to happen too. And like, it's like, they're taunting you. Like, here it is.
Yeah, you know?
And it's like, ugh. You know, I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of confused as to what record labels do since no one buys records anymore. I mean, you're kind of like a giant PR firm, I guess.
I guess maybe try and get you on the radio, which is still based on how much money you're getting and giving.
Right.
You know, because like I said, I think the especially if you're talking about selling albums and selling books.
Right.
In stores is still the best way.
Right.
Because people like the, hey, Randy, how you doing? My name's Dave. You signed the book. Mm-hmm. That's a souvenir that people can get behind. So mm-hmm. I think the more in stores you do, the better it is. But a lot of bands don't do that. And a lot of record companies still have issues with booking you in those places, which is weird to me.
Yeah, it's strange, you know. We haven't done in stores in a while. Of course, we haven't put out a record in a while. I think one thing I've heard about books, because I kind of like started looking into this, learning a little bit about the book business. Like, you know, everything's going to streaming now.
Mm-hmm.
Even like people aren't even buying the digital copy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty soon they aren't even going to steal the digital copy. They're too lazy to steal it anymore, I guess. They just want to stream it.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's a book, too.
Yeah.
You could do that with a book.
You can do it with a book. My book hasn't leaked. Knock on wood. I heard it would. I heard it would, and eventually it will, and someone will remix it or whatever. You know? Yeah. Which, whatever. But I think with books, like, one thing is that it's so much more of a physical sensation. Like, I read, and this was, you know, odd for me. I've read your first book, Lion's Tale, and then I'm about halfway through Undisputed. Mm. I was halfway through that. I bought them on a Kindle because I was on tour.
Right.
And I didn't want to have to carry around these books, you know. I was able to read the book, but I'm still like, oh, I wish I could hold it.
Yes.
And I'm looking at the pictures on the Kindle of like you know, when you were drew a picture of you going to wrestle Hart, you know, and mm-hmm. wrestle with him, I guess, when you were a kid, you were
going to be
tag team, Hart, you know? Yeah. And I was like, oh, you know, I can't really look at it the way I can with a book. And I think there's something like a tactile sensation that people still really dig with books.
I agree. Like my kids still, they read a lot and they read books.
Right.
They're not interested in the Kindle because, you know, Kindle, if you're reading it on an iPhone, it's a lot smaller and you're, you know, stroking the pages with your finger. But like you said, having that book in your hand, there is a little bit more of a sensation that goes with it rather than like, you know, a CD, you hold it, you look at it, you put it down, you listen.
Right.
a book, you're holding it and turning the pages the whole time.
Right. And also, like, you know, I go back and forth in books a lot. You know, if I'm like, if I, you know, because I'll get distracted while I'm reading. And if I'm like, who is this character or whatever, I'll go back.
Right. Yeah, you know, yeah,
yeah. And it's really easy with an actual book to just stick your finger in one spot, hold the place, and then flip back to the other spot. Okay, this is who this guy is.
Right.
And then go back. But with the Kindle, you're like,
what page was that again?
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the whole other thing is I had like 30 books on the Kindle. And then I left it in an airplane somewhere in Scandinavia.
Ooh.
I was halfway through Undisputed. Uh-huh. And like, I'm like, crap. So I had to go and buy a new one when I got back to America. You know? So yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's pluses and minuses to it. I prefer holding a book, mm-hmm. though.
Even for the pictures too, like you said, if you want to, I was like going, like I look through the pictures at first, just because that's what I do. Look at the pictures, kind of get like a little bit of a preview what may not happen. And then as you're reading, go back to the pictures, like, oh, there's Randy at 15 or whatever.
I try not to do that when I read biographies. I really try not to look to, like, normally in the middle, like there's of a lot of like rock biographies or whatever, there are these pictures. There's like, you can see it's the glossy section like four pages of pictures. I'm like, I'm not going to look. And then finally I'm like, screw it. I'm going to look, look at the pictures first. So,
yeah. But let's talk about your book. I mean, it's first and foremost, you're a great writer. I knew that just from reading your Instagram, which is incredible because you're also a great photographer, but you write like almost mini novellas describing every picture that you post. It could be three or four paragraphs or whatever it is. And it's you really get into it. You're very descriptive, which I liked right off the bat.
Thanks. I think I enjoy writing with Instagram, but it's very off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think about it while I'm writing it. And when I'm writing with pictures that I take, like, because I'm relatively young as a photographer, I've only been shooting for about 4 years. When I'm still figuring out my aesthetic and what I'm doing with photography. So when I write with the pictures, it kind of like, it's me figuring out what the picture is about in the context of my life and why I was attracted to shoot that one thing. I don't shoot in the studio, really. I don't create things. You know, I'm more of a street photographer.
Yeah, you're walking down the streets of wherever you are, you know, Hungary or something. You see an old guy sitting on a street corner and you'll take a picture of it.
Yeah, and everybody who shoots, you know, photographs, they see things differently. Everybody's eye is differently. So I'm still figuring out mine, and I'm like, why is that a compelling image to me? And I kind of figure that out as I'm writing it, you know. Writing a book was a little bit more in depth than writing with Instagram.
Yeah. You know? Well, and plus there's the first draft, there's the second draft, third, fourth, fifth, tenth.
Yeah.
There's so much whittling away.
My contract was called for 80,000 to 100,000 words, and I turned in 247,000 words, I think. It was like, because at first I was like, I was obsessively checking my word count as I wrote it. Like, I got to make it to at least 100,000 words. I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
And then I realized, like, oh, my God. You know, like, I turned it in and my editor is like, you know, there's no rewriting needed here, you know, because I write clean. I'm pretty meticulous when I'm writing. He's like, we just need amputation. So it's like whack.
Yeah. But you know, as a writer, it's like every word is gold. What can I cut?
Yeah.
But what I found out, and you probably found out too, is instead of writing four or five paragraphs about something, you can usually condense that into two or three.
Right. You can. And like, you know, I've read since I was a child, right? And growing up, I always wanted to be this writer guy. You know, I thought I was going to be, I liked Hemingway, I like Bukowski, I like Hunter S. Thompson. So I did all the things that the great writers did. I drank, I like womanized, I went out and got in fights and made a mess out of myself. I did everything the great writers did except for write. You know, I was practicing all the other stuff. I got it dialed in.
The writing's the easy part.
Yeah. I got to drink for a while, you know. But those guys, you know, there's an economy of language, like you're saying, especially with Hemingway. He redefined the way, you know, prose is written, you know, English prose. And I would like to think that I'm like this macho, short, tense writer guy, tense, short, manly sentences, but I'm way more descriptive.
And also very good sense of humor, too. You write a lot like I do, self-deprecating humor and little jokes here and there that whether people get it or not.
Yeah, you sent me that. You're like, your writing style reminds me of and this is before I read any of your books. And, you know, I was like, I gotta read Jericho's books so I can know. I like reading people's books, you know,
right.
But I hadn't read any yet. And you're like, oh, your writing style reminds me of mine. And I started reading it, and I'm like, completely. It's with the not taking yourself so effing seriously.
Yes.
You know, because people think, you know, I guess, you know, so, I mean, we're public people. People have weird perceptions of what we are as a person. They're going to think of you as like, well, God knows what they're going to think of you, of the baby face, the heel, whatever, you know. They're going to think of you as a serious wrestler, dude. And if someone messes with you, you're going to body slam.
Yeah,
I'm
going to kick their ass. Yeah,
yeah, you're going to throw the walls of Jericho on them and then, you know, that kind of tough guy crap. And they're going to look at me and they're going to look at one of our shows and they're going to be like, this dude's a lunatic.
Yeah,
you know,
he's screaming all the time.
Violent. And yeah, people have told me like when they read my Instagram posts, they're like, I read your Instagram post in your Lamb of God screaming voice. And I'm like, why would you do that?
Right.
You know, I never use that except for when I'm on stage.
And that's the character that you're playing while on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know? It's an expression of it's how I express myself when I'm on stage, you know, but that's what we're doing when we're on stage. That's what you're doing when you're on stage with Fozzy or when you're in the ring, you know, regular stuff, I'm a goofball, you know, so I have no desire to take myself seriously all the time. And I never have a problem like laughing at my own stupidity.
Well, and that's what comes across. But, you know, the book, once again, is the story of how there was an incident on stage where a fan jumped off the stage, was pushed off the stage, whatever the accusation was, and ended up passing away. And you were held accountable for that.
Right.
And basically put in jail in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
From the plane straight to jail.
Yes.
And I remember everybody was talking about this when it happened, and you were almost like I, in my opinion, when this was going on, I was like, this should be like an international incident.
Right.
Like, you should be on CNN, and we should be lobbying to get you out.
Right.
Because you were held there for 34 days?
37.
37 days?
I did 34 days in prison, 3 days in jail.
Unbelievable. So, I mean, it's such an amazing story and an incredible story about about what you went through. But basically, tell us what led to this happening. You were doing a show.
Right. Basically, what happened is we played a show in 2010, in the summer of 2010 in Prague. We had never played there before. And there was basically no security. We have very strict security requirements in our contract, you know, and our tour manager met with the promoter and the people running the club. Do you have this in place? Yes. You know, and then we went on stage and there was no security, no barricade. You know, there was like one security dude who was, I didn't even know he was there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He was there, but I didn't know because he didn't do his job. And there was a barricade, not a solid face barricade, but a barricade with a open face and a rung in the middle. So it was basically a ladder.
Mm.
And it was pushed flush with the stage, which is, you know, 3 feet tall.
This is a small kind of
tiny,
classic dingy European clubs. Where you're like, what the hell are we even doing?
Yeah, here? Yeah, right. A dump.
Right.
And I didn't even go into the club that day because when I got off the bus, you know, one of my crew guys is like, don't even go in there. It's a dump.
And let me explain this to the people listening. Sometimes you go to clubs and it's like, oh, the dressing room or backstage. There is no dressing room or backstage a lot of times. It is hang out on the bus, change into your gear, rock gear on the bus, do the show, walk back to the bus, and wash your face in the sink of the bus, and that's about the extent of your shower.
Yeah, that's it. You know, this place had like a curtain up with like a hallway where all our gear was. That's about, you know, and maybe one other room. It wasn't like a deluxe rock club.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And the gear was like crammed on stage. So from the first song, you know, there are people on stage and, you know, there was one kid who kept on taking the stage. And finally I took him down on the stage and put a grapevine on him, wrapped my leg around his, and was screaming in his face like, no, 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 no. And eventually, you know, he got the point. And then later that night, I got off stage and our publicist, Maria, called me and she kept on calling me and I answered and she's like, you know, Randy Paul Gray is dead from Slipknot. Mm-hmm. He had passed away and she called me in Europe to let me know. And it was a bad day, you know. It sucked. It was a crappy show because of all this nonsense.
Let me just say, and there's no reason why you should be wrestling guys on stage.
No, because
that is not cool. Your job is the singer of a rock and roll band. And I'll tell you from experience, especially after what happened with Dime. Dime was assassinated on stage in a club. Nobody's allowed on the fucking stage.
Right.
That's just the rule now. There's no more real stage diving or anything like that. No. That's a thing of the past.
Yes.
So just the fact that you had to wrestle somebody on stage is so not even fair to you, and it's not something that happens every night.
No, and it's like the stage is really small. People don't realize it's dangerous. You know, it's really small. There's equipment all over the place. Yeah. Like people, it's
guitars swinging.
Yeah,
you know?
Cabinets. Like we've had techs. One of our techs, like, basically got his ankle broke one time when cabinets fell on him. You know, like
wow,
it's dangerous.
Right.
You know, especially on a small stage. But regardless, you know, we played the show. We left. We went to Poland. And I didn't really even think anything of it because it was, you know, it was a bad show. And I got the news that my friend had died, you know, and it was our first time in Prague. I remembered that, you know, but other than that, it was, you know.
On to the next show.
Yeah, 70, 80 minutes. So 2 years later, we play in Norway and this beautiful festival called Hova Fest outside of Arendelle. Beautiful, just great day. Took a sailboat to the festival. And then we... an antique sailboat. And then we land in Prague and we have a day off and I'm stoked because I'm going to go see a bunch of history and stuff. I like to go explore.
Take some pictures.
Yeah, yeah, take some photos, all that stuff. So we get off the airplane and I walk down to the airplane. There's someone collecting passports, which was kind of weird, but I was just like, whatever. It's some sort of check thing. You know, they're checking passports. And at the end, they usher me and my band into this little room to the side of the jetway, and all the other passengers are going off into the airport. And once we're all in there, I'm in there, and I look around, and there's five dudes, big dudes, like big dudes with face mask on. You couldn't see their eyes, you know. They were
like riot cops, sort of.
Like a SWAT team, or they were there to get Bin Laden or something. They had machine guns. They had body armor, big pointy knives. There were three big, severe, like Eastern Bloc looking dudes who were plainclothes detectives as well. And then there was a woman who it turned out was a head detective. And once we were all in there, she walked up to me and she goes, David Blight. She called it Blight. Yeah. I'm like, yes, that's me. She handed me my passport and she goes, this is for you. Please gather any medicines you may need. We need to go. And I looked at this piece of paper, and it said that I was being charged with the equivalent of manslaughter, you know? It said that I had willingly injured some young man. The English is kind of funny on the charges. Like, I had willingly pushed this guy from the podium, which they mean stage, you know? And he had fallen, and from what I could gather, he'd gone into a coma and died a month later. And this was 2 years previously, and we had no idea, and I was to be charged.
So you had never heard anything about that up until that moment?
Of course not, man. You know, I mean, if I had wanted to be a jerk and hide from the situation, I would have just been like, screw that, I'm not going back to Prague. But that's not the way I would have handled it. We would have, you know,
of course,
made some sort of attempt to deal with this situation, you know. And the Czech government contacted the U.S. government, you know, after this young man died and said, we want to investigate this Bly guy about the possible manslaughter charge. And the U.S. government said, no, screw you.
Oh, but you didn't even know about that either at that point in time.
Wow. But they neglected to tell me.
Right.
By the way, you're wanted for manslaughter in a foreign country.
Yeah, something you might want to know about.
Yeah, and so then we show back up. They take me off to jail for 3 days.
And so then you're going straight from the airport right to jail?
Oh, immediately.
Are you telling anything to, like, you know, Chris or anybody in the band? Like, saying, dude, like, call somebody.
I looked at my guitar player, Mark, and I'm like, call my wife, tell her I've been arrested.
Wow.
And someone said, you might want to call, someone in my band or crew was yelling at me, like, you might want to call the embassy or get a lawyer. And I thought that was just ridiculous. I'm like, might? Maybe? Yeah. No, I'm going to handle this by myself.
Do you think so?
Yeah, you think? No, I'm going to deal with this on my own. I got the smarts for that. So I went to jail, and they questioned me, and then I went before a judge, and he said, why should I grant you bail? You know, until if we're going to indict you on this charge, why should I grant you bail? And I looked him straight in the eye and I said, because I'm a man of my word. I want to clear my name, you know. I don't trust anyone that can't look in the eye. Mm-hmm. Like I'm looking at you right now, you know. Right. That's the way I was raised.
Yeah.
So I looked him in the eye and told him I'd be back. He said, how much can you afford? And I was like, for bail, I was thinking, I was like, you know, maybe $100,000. And he's like, okay, $200,000.
So you can afford $100,000. Great, I'll double.
Yeah, yeah,
see you
yeah,
later, punk.
Yeah, yeah. So off I go to prison. This 123-year-old at the time prison called Pancratz Prison, and paid bail. We borrowed money from the label to pay bail.
And that's another thing too. Just let me interject. It's like a band of Lamb of God. You guys are a huge band. You headline, you know, festivals, and you got a great fan base. But $200,000 is not just something you go to the Lamb of God bank account and just take it out.
No.
Right.
No. It's,
right.
No. We're not Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
We got an advance against our current record budget for that. You know.
Right. Who was the record label?
Epic. Sony.
Okay.
Sony Epic.
Yeah. That's cool that they loan that to you because they didn't have to.
Right. No, they didn't. So thank you, Epic. And then, you know, I paid bail and I got all pumped to leave prison for a while. And then they're like, no, the prosecuting attorney objected to your bail. So, like, unlike America, I don't know how they do it in Canada, but if you pay bail,
they
let you go.
Right, like within a day or whatever.
And if you don't show up, they hire a bounty hunter and, you know,
and that's
dog the bounty hunter flies right. over from Hawaii and gets you or
that's
whatever.
That's what dog does.
Yeah,
right.
That's what he does, you know.
Right.
But that's not how it is there. They're like, no, you know, you paid bail, but that's not good enough. So then they
do you think they were messing with you because you're an American rock star or because
I think it was primarily the prosecuting attorney. He was the one that kept on raising objections. He's a former police interrogator. And I know that the Czech police, their law enforcement area was not happy with our government for being like, no, we won't even help you.
Gotcha. So they knew that information that you didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that he was kind of ticked off on that. And really, the dude, I think I was... he just wanted to keep me in prison until trial. And then obviously he wanted me in prison for a while, you know? I think I was a notch on his belt, really.
Sure.
You know, just another,
how are you? I mean, the answer is obvious, but I just curious, how are you feeling at this point in time? Like you mentioned, I got a day off. I'm going to go take some pictures. And 3 days later, you're standing in front of a judge being accused of basically murder, paying bail and in prison. I mean, that's happening so fast for you.
Yeah, it was really weird. And, you know, I write about it in the book because the day before I was arrested, it was like a perfect day, dude. We were in Arendale, Norway, and this festival we played at was this island in the middle of a fjord. And it's like picturesque. And we took an antique sailboat built in like 1930 something. And there was a captain and he had like this chick who was his first mate who looked like she was out of a catalog, like a model, like a Norwegian model right. catalog. And me and Mark are sitting there on the front of this freaking sailboat, like sailing through the fjord, you know?
Like it doesn't get much better
like,
than this.
Like I looked at him, I'm like, dude, our lives are cool, right?
Yeah,
you know? He's like, yeah, you know? It's like, we're sailing, like Lionel Richie or something, you know? And then the next day, blam, you're in prison, you know? And for me, at first, it was just so, like, at the airport when I was arrested, I was like, I mean, I don't know what your experience are with psychedelics, but it was kind of psychedelic for a minute, a little surreal. I was like, whoa, you know, I actually pinched myself to see if I was dreaming. You know, you hear about people doing that. I did it. I'm like, am I dreaming? No, I'm pinching,
Didn't work,
you know?
Yeah.
No. But then very quickly I realized, you know, I need to pay very close attention to everything that's happening around me. I need to be very careful with what I say and who I say it to, you know, because it was just so messed up. Nobody spoke English. It was crazy, man. Like, and anything I said had to be said through a translator. Like, during my police interrogation, I had this translator, and he sucked.
You don't know what they're saying, right? Yeah.
No, and I'm saying all this stuff, and the translator is looking at me from, and I'm being very careful during my interrogation, like, because I know what I say is very important, you know? They're looking, they're asking me to describe a night, 70 minutes of a night that happened 2 years ago. You remember what you did for 70 minutes 2 years ago?
No.
It was tough, you know? So
I'm even just thinking of someone saying, hey, remember that gig you played in, you know, in Leeds, England 2 years ago? You'd be like, no.
Right. No, I don't.
The only thing that I would remember is, like you said, that's the day that I found out Paul Gray passed away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That would be what I would remember.
Yeah, it's a big deal, you know, when someone dies. And it's, I also remember the first time we play in a country. Mm-hmm. And that was our first time. So I remembered that, you know. But, like, I'm telling him, I'm telling this police investigator very carefully, and the interrogator would look at me and say, she says that's not so important. And I'm like, yes, it is important. It, you know, if I'm describing, you know, the way I do things on a stage.
Yeah, every word is important at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was frustrating, but, like, you know, I just tried to stay in the moment and realize, like, no one's killing me. I'm not being shot at. I have food, clothes, and shelter, you know, and
tell us about some of the clothes that they had you wear.
Oh God, dude. Like, well, they let me keep my shoes after a while, but they took the laces away, and then they gave me laces, but they issued you, like, these weird, I think they were made out of wood and leather, like, sandals, and they gave you two t-shirts. They were tan, and they were lit. When you say threadbare, they were threadbare. You could hold them up, and I could, like,
wow.
I could look through it. I could be like, who is that? Oh, that's Chris Jericho. I see him through my shirt.
So, like, used shirts that have been in the system for years.
Like pantyhose looking.
Right, you know? Wow.
And then these really weird green, like, rough pants, but I don't know if they just made them one size or what, because, like, they were all, had obviously all been, like, custom tailored by prisoners whenever they got them. So, like,
oh, I see.
They were cut apart, and, like, for me, I'm a skinny dude. So I got some pairs where it's like, you know, they had been cut apart, and I'd have to cut off a piece of my bed sheet in order to make a belt and tie it together.
Wow.
When my wife came to see me, I put on my best clothes I had, and that they had given me, and it was still, like, holes in this shirt, these weird pants that I had tied up with string, and one leg, she was laughing about it, one leg was hemmed, like, 2 inches higher than the other, like, up around my ankles, like, it's just crazy.
So they're just pauper's clothes, they're rags, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it was rags, you know. You know, I wasn't mistreated by anyone in there, by any guards or prisoners, you know. I mean, there were definitely some guards who were jerks.
Tom Selleck?
Tom Selleck. Well, there was Tom
Selleck
1.
Was all right, yeah.
Yeah, there was Tom Selleck 1 and Tom Selleck 2.
Yeah, you do a great job of naming the guards. That's what I would do. Like, that guy looks like Tom Selleck.
Oh, yeah.
But Tom Selleck 2 looked like kind of later years.
Yes, Tom Selleck 1 was like classic Tom Selleck from like the 80s.
Magnum P.I.
Yeah, the Magnum. And he kind of had a little bit of a new wave thing going. And then Tom Selleck 2 was like, he was like a more restrained modern era Tom's like, his mustache wasn't quite so, like,
bushy
and magnificent, you know.
But who was the one guard that was always giving you shit?
Bradley. And I have friends named Bradley, no offense to Bradleys, but this one guy, he is like, had like a little man complex, a short man complex, and he was a jerk, dude. He was one of those dudes, because there are prison guards like that in every prison, from what I've been told, who just, they're like the kid who got picked on in high school. So
he's got a power trip going on.
Yeah. So now he's going to mess with a bunch of dudes who are locked up.
So what would he do?
He's just real shitty attitude. And he'd like, I remember he'd knock on the door and he'd be like, I've got great news for you. He was also the only guard who spoke English well, which sucked.
Yeah.
You know, because he was the one screwing with me. I'd be like, what is it, dude? What is it? You got herpes? That'd be great news for me, you know? And he's like, lunch is coming, you know? And like, he'd just try and...
he's messing with your mind.
Yes, yeah. Trying his best. He'd come in and like, apparently according to regulations, when you come in, when a guard opens a door, if you're on your bed, you're supposed to stand up. And he'd come in for no reason and open the door. He'd be like, you must stand up. And then after a while, we were like, no, I'm not standing up. You can, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. What are you going to do? Throw me in prison?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Screw you.
Deny my bail.
Yeah.
Right.
He was just a jerk, you know? And if like some guards would let other people, like if you were, because I had, there were some guys in there who spoke a little bit of English. They would help me with writing. Like if I needed to write something in Czech to like a note to the commissary to get something.
Right. Like if you wanted something from the commissary, you would have to write an actual note saying,
first.
I want this.
Yeah, at first. And then after I was moving the population, you could go once a week. But at first you had to write this note and they gave me this shopping list. They were like, okay, shopping is tomorrow. Here's this list. It's all in Czech. And I'm looking at it like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like a menu completely in Czech, which is not even like Spanish or French or anything close to English. It's
right.
Just totally different.
If it was in Spanish, you could put it together.
Yeah, you know? I could put it together, you know, like chorizo. Let's have it. It's sausage, whatever, you know. But like the other guards, if I would be like, hey, I need some, can I pass this note to my friend two cells down? He speaks English. And they'd be like, oh, he speaks English. And he'd do it. This guy, Bradley, no, screw you. You know, he was just a hard ass, you know, total hard ass, screwing with my mind, always trying to. And I really had to watch myself around him.
That's the type of guy that gets you in trouble.
Yeah, big time.
Right.
And he's the type of guy that would like try and push your buttons until you did snap on him.
Yeah.
You know, and then once you do that in prison, you're really f***ed.
All right, talking to Randy Bly about his book, Dark Days. We've got so much more. He's got some very dark stories, some crazy details, some big laughs, and a lot of sadness as well. It was a very bittersweet experience for him. He's going to share it more after I share the secret to living a longer, healthy life more with DDP Yoga. Once again, I bet you Randy would have loved to have had some DDP Yoga while incarcerated in Czechoslovakia to get some exercicio in the prison cell. And you guys know that I do DDP Yoga regularly as well, wherever I am. It's an amazing fitness program. Thousands are experiencing the benefits. A couple of you hit me up on the Twitter recently to tell me about it. Jeffrey Matthews at GunnerJ007 on Twitter said, listen to TIJ for the past year and finally made the plunge and got me DDP Yoga workout tapes. Listen, you'll be glad you did, Jeffrey. Best money you ever spent. I guarantee it. Tommy Stringer, the real Tommy S on Twitter, did the same thing. He tweeted, with help from TIJ, I'm going to change my life with DDP Yoga. Ready to feel the burn? /#get fit/#stay fit. Is it hashtag? Hashtag, you know what I'm talking about. Take it from those two guys. DDP Yoga, not just for pro athletes, it's for everyone. Thousands who just want to live a healthier life are doing DDP Yoga. So much more than just a workout. It's life-changing, life-saving. Check out the Resurrection of Jake the Snake's documentary. DDP and DDP Yoga saved his life, literally. Working on doing the same thing for Scott Hall has improved so much since he started DDP Yoga. DDP designed this program to work for anyone and everyone, no matter what your age or fitness level is. Great option for those of you trying to get in shape and live healthier. A great choice as well if you're already in shape and trying to maintain. Okay, DDP makes it easy. He's got it all covered, especially if you get the max pack, all the workouts on DVD, grid chart to track your progress, poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga, which is very important. You get recipes so you get on the healthy eating plan. You get all the workouts on MP3 so you can exercise on the go. You do DDP Yoga wherever you are, whenever you want. That's what I do. Hotel rooms, back of the Fozzie tour bus, tough enough dressing room, wherever I am, that's where I do my DDP Yoga. I just throw down a towel and get to work, put on a pair of shorts and do my thing, man. You go at your own pace. DDP's got beginner workouts, intermediate workouts, advanced workouts. You start where you're comfortable and move up when you're ready. DDP says, this is your workout. Do it your way. So if you want to do it your way, and I highly suggest you do, you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of a special offer only available to you sexy beast listeners of TIJ. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. This offer is not going to last forever. Once again, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best shape of your life and start it today. All right, more crazy stories from Randy Bly coming as we talk about his book, Dark Days, which is a riveting, riveting book. I mean, I predict it's going to be a bestseller. Go pick it up now at a bookstore on Kindle. But first, let me tell you about Arctic-E's Instant Cold Wraps. If you run, bike, lift weights, you're a singer, you're a wrestler, whatever it is, you got to know about Arctic-E's. They're great at providing instant cold therapy to your injuries, aches, pains, and while you're still active. That means you can wear them and still run or bike or surf or wrestle or sing or whatever you want to do. They keep your joints and muscles wrapped up and cool. They keep it tight and cool. Arctic Ease Instant Cold Wraps stay in place while giving you similar recovery benefits to ice therapy. And the fruit thing about Arctic Ease, no freezer necesario. That's cookie, man. The wraps are sleek and comfy, no bulky ice. They don't need them. They don't show under your clothes. They don't keep you weighed down with a big bag of ice attached to you. If you're a gym rat, surfer, all the like things that you like to do, activity, physical activity is a choice. If you check out Arctic Ease Instant Cold Wraps and you're having aches and pains, you will keep yourself from being sidelined because they really work. They're reusable, clinically tested, and proven effectivo. Just put Arctic Ease on and you have targeted instant cold compression therapy where you need it, when you need it, before, during, and after exercise, all right? For pain, swelling, injuries, you can stay safe, you stay tight, you use Arctic Ease for instant, long-lasting cold compression therapy even while you're training, okay? You've got to try it to believe it. You go to CVS Pharmacy or you go to ArcticEase.com and you do it now. All right, so you're talking about the clothes that you were wearing. Mm-hmm. How about the food that they gave you? When you said lunch is coming, what exactly would you have?
Well, the first meal of the day that I had in the Czech prison was lunch. And, like, they brought in this stew, and it wasn't really thick. It had some sort of tiny bits of meat in it and what looked like an unbaked sub roll in it.
Okay.
and it about tasted like that. Right. And they call it, that's knedlicky, I believe they say it. They call that dumplings. Mm-hmm. It's not like grandma's dumplings. It's like a big wad of dough in there. There's a bowl of stew and a bowl of this watery, like, chicken stock soup and a piece of bread. And that was lunch. And so I'm like, this is kind of light, you know. I'm kind of hoping that it's going to be better for dinner. It's got to be, you know. Right. Okay, lunch sucks, you know. I mean, it wasn't, you know, inedible, but it wasn't really solid food. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, dinner's going to be better, and this is the first day, you know. Dinner comes, and all it is soup and bread, not even the stew. And I find out
that even less.
Lunch is the main meal of the day.
Oh.
Over there. And they, I think, like, once a week, maybe they give us, like, chicken and rice or stuff, but almost all the rest of the time it was just stew, some sort of slob. So we didn't, not a lot of solid food. They say in the Czech Republic, if you want to lose weight, that's the prison to go to. I was told that.
Did you lose weight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I can't afford.
Yeah. You're a skinny guy. Yeah.
Gray came into my beard for the first time, and that's no big deal. You know, I'm 44. It's about time. You know?
Yeah. But still.
Yeah. It was like,
because you were talking about how it was not a hassle, but get razors, coffee, cigarettes, a pencil,
yeah,
paper, all of that stuff was, you had to basically get it or earn it.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have that for a while.
No. When I was arrested, I had a change purse in me, because you're in Europe. I don't know about you, but I carry a little change purse because, you know, there's €1 coins and all that stuff. Yes. I don't do that in America. Because we don't really use dollar coins that much.
Yeah, there's $2 coins in Europe. There's £2 coins.
Yeah,
in
it's
England.
Like loonies, yeah, and toonies. In
right.
Canada,
yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But so you're in these different countries, and I have a little change purse. And luckily, after a few days, they had given me that back once I was in there. It was in my pockets, and in that I had like a couple of hair ties, some subway maps of New York City, little card ones. So that was kind of cool. I'd look at those. I had six Lamb of God Willie Adler signature guitar picks, which was awesome because I used them to trade for, like, cigarettes and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was there fans of Lamb of God in the prison?
Yeah, there were fans of Lamb of God in the prison. Some of them were guards.
Wow. That's cool.
But I mean, nobody screwed with me in there, but I would have preferred. It's a weird thing to go to prison in a foreign country, and you're the top news story in that country.
Right.
Because I was the top news story for a while when I was arrested. My face, the other prisoners would come out to walk, and they'd have this newspaper, and they're like, it's you. you know, and I'm like, yes, it's me, you know. So everyone in there knew who I was.
That old adage of there's no such thing as bad publicity, this probably is bad publicity.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, you know, I don't know, okay, I'm American. I didn't see any other Americans in there, only one other British guy.
Really, the whole time?
Yeah, the whole time. But I was like, I don't know if someone, I mean, prison, people in prison, it's not a place where you get together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya, you know what I mean? I didn't know if, like, somebody in there maybe had a bad experience with Americans, had something against them.
Right, sure.
Or someone had, you know, was a relative of this young man who had died, or if, you know, they just happen to read the news and they're like, screw this guy, I'm going to shank him.
Just a pissed off mood or something.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, that happens. And, you know, we were mixed in population with everyone. So it was, you know, I would have rather have been anonymous, you know. Mm-hmm. But nobody screwed with me there, the prisoners. Everybody was really cool, you know.
So what's going on in America at this point in time as far as what are you hearing from lawyers?
I'm not hearing really anything because, I mean, I had a Czech lawyer who came to see me, and they were mostly just working. The primary thing at that time was to make sure my bail was honored because they kept on appealing it and doubling it and all that stuff. And we had to borrow another $200,000 or so dollars from some a good friend or two of mine. Thank you very much, dudes. You know who you are.
Are these buddies of yours that are contributing?
Yeah. Right. They loaned us the money.
Gotcha.
Very nice people. Yeah. It would be tacky to name them.
Well, no. I'm just saying, so it wasn't just the record. I mean, now you have other friends coming out of the woodwork saying, hey, man, we got to get you out of
here.
Yeah,
yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, which I'm very blessed to have good friends, and these people happened to have a little cash laying around that time. So, you know, all I knew when I was in prison is that, you know, that we were trying to get my bail honored. And like, I got like a letter from, you know, my wife, of course. I got a letter from my drummer, one from my guitar player. They're like, dude, the community is supporting you. You know, the response, everybody's really behind you in the music community. And I'm like, that's cool. But, you know, that's all I knew. It was just like in a letter. I didn't know exactly what, you know. I know like, one day I was going out to walk, and some of the prisoners I knew were like super excited, and they're like, you know this man, Ozzy Osbourne? And I'm like, yes, I do. I know Ozzy, you know? And they're like, Ozzy Osbourne says good things for you. You go home soon. Really? Like Ozzy, like, is going to, you know, like.
Ozzy's going to grant the wish.
Yeah, he's going to be like, all aboard! And the crazy train's going to pull in, and like. I'm gonna ride out of, you know. Yeah. I'm like, what did Ozzy say for me? But it was in some Czech paper, you know, and they're like, they didn't speak much English. It was they were doing really well to say Ozzy Osbourne says good things for you.
Yeah.
You know? So I was pumped. So many people in the music community supported me, you know, throughout this. It's just so many people.
Well, everybody, even if you did, like, we'd never met at that point in time, and I was supporting everybody. Yeah. Who was out there was like one of the brothers needs help.
Of course, you know. And it was overwhelming. But I mentioned this in the book because it just kind of, it spoke to me like the level of support that was going on, starting at like the dude who helped invent heavy metal, right? Mm-hmm. Ozzy and Sharon wrote a letter to the judge who was overseeing the thing. And they said, you know, they spoke of my character. They said how we had done Ozfest. They had known me for a long time. And they said, if you will just honor his bail and let him out, we will put on an Ozfest concert in Prague.
Wow.
At our own cost. And you can donate all of the proceeds to any charity you wish if you will just let him out on
really?
Bail. I mean, dude.
That's huge.
That's massive. Yeah. Ozfest costs a lot of money. Oh, yeah.
Especially over in Prague.
Yeah, and they're like, we'll do an Ozfest. We'll donate the money. Just let him out on bail.
Wow.
Not don't find him guilty. Don't, you know.
Just let him go home on bail.
Just let him go home on bail, you know. Let it happen, you know. So, that was very, very touching to me. And, I mean, it's singer of Black Sabbath.
Yeah, it's Ozzy. Yeah.
And so it goes from there down to the kids who come to our show, you mm-hmm. know, and everyone in between. It was just this massive outpouring of support, and I didn't really know about it till I got home, you know, because I didn't have internet. I didn't have
nothing. You were getting letters.
Nothing. Yeah, every now and then, if they got delivered, you know. So to come out, it was just like, whoa, it was really mind-blowing for me.
Obviously, the judge turned down Ozzy's offer.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I still have a copy of the letter.
Did you ever get a chance to, have you talked to him since? Or seen
I
him
have not seen Ozzy since. I wrote him and Sharon a big thank you, and a mutual friend of ours was talking, saying he was, Ozzy had said to say hello to me, and
that's cool.
I had said to say back to him, you know, recently when we were in Europe.
That's great. Yeah.
But great dude, you know.
Just to make that offer and just get it out there.
Yeah, him and Sharon, you know. Yeah. But it was from both of them. I was just like completely blown away. You know.
Let's talk about some of the guys that you live with, your roommates, your cellmates. Now, who was the Jarl? Was Tom Selleck, right?
Jarl was Tom Selleck number two.
And that's all he ever said to you was Jarl.
Jarl. That was very deep, and like that was the only word he knew, I think. Jarl. So, you know, I've got to sign some papers for my family to come in. And he's like, Jarl. That's what it sounded like. You know,
it's like Groot.
Yeah, exactly. He was one of the guards. That was Tom Selleck too.
So, what's your cellmates?
My cellmates, like when I got arrested and I got sent to the prison, I walk into the cell and there's this like, he looked like a dark skinned Asian version of the Pillsbury Doughboy. Right, he's sitting there, and I walk in. Bradley lets me into the cell, and he's like, welcome to your new friend. He is a mongoloid. And I'm like, ooh, you know, mongoloid. He meant Mongol, obviously.
Mongolian.
Yeah, Mongolian. So I walk in, and there's this dude, and I'm like, hey, I'm Randy. And he just looked at me. And I'm like, what's up? You know, I tried saying hello to him in a few different languages, and it didn't work. And finally, I used the time-honored technique that we Americans use when we're traveling, which is to speak louder and slower, and that way the person will understand us, of course. Hello, I am Randy from America.
Oh, how are you?
Yeah, right.
Why don't you say so? Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you just say so? No, his name was Dorge, and he was a fat, alcoholic Mongolian dude who was there. Because all of this came out through like pantomime over the course of weeks.
Because you're living with this guy 24/7.
Yes.
He speaks no English. You speak no Mongolian.
I speak no Mongolian.
Obviously, right?
You know? And so we're figuring all this. It was really bizarre, man. But he was like this alcoholic dude who was in the Czech Republic illegally. He had no visa. And then he had already been thrown out once before, I think. But he was a truck driver and he loved to drink vodka. How do I know this? Because he talked about drinking vodka all the time. He'd just be like, pure vodka, you know. He wrecked his truck and then went to prison. And so, like, I was in there for him, like, for, like, 3 weeks. He whistled constantly, whistling. He slurped his food.
It's enough to drive you crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and I'm in this tiny, like, 8x10 room with him 23 hours a day, except for the 1 hour we're let out to go to walk, and he's just tapping and whistling and slurping his food. And anytime I would do anything like push-ups or anything, you know, he would be like, bah, you like girl, you know. I started teaching him something. He was like the world's worst personal trainer, dude. He just sat there and whistled and berated you and was just this fat tough crap, you know. It was so bad.
Were you intimidated at all when you first went in there? Like, you know, you think prison, like, is he going to beat me up, or is he going to want to rape me, or?
Him?
Yeah, like when you first walked in there.
No,
okay.
No, not him.
Okay.
No, he was like, I walked in and I was like, this dude is chubby. He's like not the brightest. I'm like, I'll handle him, you know.
Yeah,
but he drove me crazy eventually. Like, I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna strangle this guy. So there aren't many people of Mongolian descent in the Czech Republic. Like, not at all. I had my dad actually like look up statistics, and because he's really good at math, and put the percentages, and I figured it out. It's in my book somewhere, but it's this minute amount of Mongolians in the Czech Republic.
2% or 1% or
less than
1%.
Okay. Far less.
Okay.
So I'm in this, you know, what are the odds? Here I am in a cell with this Mongolian guy. His name was George, like George with a D, and he's driving me crazy, and he's, you know, insulting me because I'm reading books as if it's like,
right,
like it's a bad thing to do.
Yeah. Working out and reading books is not different.
Yeah, or writing, you know, he's just making fun of me. And all he did was sit on his bed and stare at the wall and whistle and drive me crazy.
Is it the same song all the time?
Yes, it was like this.
Do you remember it?
Like two, it went. For 23 hours a day, just that. Da, da, da,
da, da, da. And you have to write a melody line on your next record.
At first, I was like, "Oh, this is like some Asian Mongolian stuff." And then, like an hour or two later, I'm like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna kill this guy!" You know?
Wow.
Like, because, like, you know, I've read The Adventures of Marco Polo and Kublai Khan and all the Mongols, like riding the horses across Europe and Asia and conquering everything. I'm like, "This is gonna be awesome. This guy's gonna tell me about Mongolia." No. No, it wasn't awesome. He sucked. So I'm in there for him for like 2 weeks. And then one day I went to go see my lawyer, and I come back, and Tom Selleck, number one. Yes, Tom Selleck won. And Bradley were there, and they're like, "It's time to move." And I open up my cell. They put me in the cell, and George had already packed all my stuff. And then they moved us to this other cell, and they're laughing the whole time while they're walking to this other cell with me. And I'm like, this is not good. Because I'd never seen them in such a good mood.
They're so happy. So
they're so happy. That means
bad must be
something.
To
they
you.
Must. You know, they're full of glee over something horrible that's going to happen to me. So they open up the door and they're like, "Welcome to your new home." And inside, there's another Mongolian.
Like, and, what?
Yes, it's like a bad joke. You know, an American singer and two Mongolians walking to
a prison.
Yeah, walking to a Czech prison. Right, you know. Right. But this dude, his name was Gambold, and he was like a businessman, and he had gotten the short end of the stick, I think, on some weird business deal back in Mongolia where they were trying to decide on whether or not to extradite him back to Mongolia where he would go to prison. He had some weird business partner. He did not belong in prison. He was like a straight-laced business dude, really good guy, and I believed him, you know. I think he just, because Mongolia is super corrupt, super corrupt. So I think there was something to do with that. But it was kind of, he was awesome, man. He was smart. He spoke a little English. And but then my other roommate, George, because there was another Mongolian, then proceeded to stop whistling as much, but just talk in Mongolian all the time.
Constantly.
And the other Mongolian guy, Gambled, he'd be like falling asleep. He could sleep through anything. And my first cellmate just talking to no one, to no one. Like, I want to strangle you, you know? I'm going to strangle you in your sleep.
Right.
So there's three of us in one cell, and it's, you know, not any bigger than the other one. You know, no hot water, just a sink with cold water, no mirror. A toilet in the corner, no curtain, no nothing. That's it.
Oh my God. What's the story about the shower? You had to take a shower, and was he all bloody, or what was going on?
No, I walked into his. We went.
How often would you take a shower? Once a week?
Twice a week.
Okay.
I think 1 week we only got one, but we got it twice a week. And it was like screwed up, like shower, like big tile, dirty, dark room with like four shower heads running over. And we walk into this shower room. And I'm stoked because it's like it's shower day. And there's no AC in that prison, no ventilation. And we're in the basement also, by the way, where they put you to monitor you for depression when you first come to let's see if he's depressed. Let's stick him in the dungeon,
if he
right?
Isn't, he will be.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, we're going, and everybody went at the same time if you were in a cell. So the three of us walk in, and I'm like, I hope there's not a lot of dudes today. Because sometimes it would just be you and your cellmates. And then sometimes there would be like nine people, and you'd have to like take turns and wash as quick as you could because they'd only let you in there.
There's a time limit.
Yeah, a time limit. So I'm walking in, and we walk in, and they open the cell door, and it's like the shower cell door, and this incredible this smell was just ungodly came out of the shower on this blast of steam. And I was like, oh, my God, what is that? And we walk in, and there's this dude standing there, and he's unwrapping this bandage from around him. And it looks like about 15 feet of bandage, and it's covered in, like, what looks like pus and blood. And we're standing there, you know, in a shower.
Right.
Right? It's not the sanitary environment, you know. It's a small room. He's undoing all this stuff, and I'm like, what, did he get stabbed or something or what? You know, and then I see this like what looks like aquarium tubing next to his stomach. And I'm like, what is that? Is it like a drug smuggling device? What is that? And then all of a sudden he goes bloop and then just pulls it out, and it's a colostomy bag.
Oh.
And he just drops it on the floor. And then he's standing there. And he's got his guts. There's this hole in his guts. You could see it. And
dude.
His flesh had been under that bandage God knows how long. And there's his colostomy bag full of shit and piss on the shower floor. And because I'm just standing there transfixed, I'm looking at him. And he was a short dude. You look down, and he's standing there naked. And he's butt naked. And there's his Johnson. And it's like...
down to his knees.
It's down to his hung, right? And it's... covered in warts, right? And I'm like, oh my God, dude, he's got a colostomy bag. You could see his guts. He's like got venereal disease. And like, we're supposed to get in the shower with this dude because this is the only place.
And wow.
It was so horrible, man. It was so horrible. And me and my cellies were just like, oh my God. Just like horrified.
Just can't look away.
You'll
never forget that image. Yeah,
never. Ugh. Ever. And like, you know, the poor guy, I mean, it's like, I mean, it's not, I mean, what you do with your dick is your business, you know? But like, it's not his fault that I'm in the shower with him, but it really, like, he could tell that we were like kind of panicked by this guy. And I mean, it's like, I don't know what kind of diseases he had. You could see his guts. Yeah, there's bodily fluids all over the place.
Yeah.
It was so gross. And, like, it really, you know, he could tell. I could tell he could tell I didn't want to be in there with him. And it really, it was emotionally, it showed me what prison can do to you real quick. Because for a little bit, I just didn't give up. I'm like, a really polite guy. I have a lot of compassion for people. But I was kind of like, this dude, I'm not getting anywhere near him. And then on the way out, I'm just like, oh man, that sucks, you know. That sucks, because it kind of turned me into that protective sort of animal, like I'm protecting myself.
Right,
so gross, you know.
Yeah.
It was not cool. And then we're like yelling at the guard, and who I named Archie Bunker. That's another one. You know, like all in the family, because he looked like the monster.
And why was Bradley Bradley? He just looked like
a Bradley. Okay, yeah. And I have friends named Bradley.
Yeah, sure, sure.
This guy gives Bradley
a bad name. Yeah.
He wasn't a Brad. He was a Bradley.
Okay.
You know?
She's done with Archie Bunker.
But he was like this. He looked like Archie Bunker, like from All in the Family. And he was an asshole like him too, you know. But we're yelling at him like in three different languages, Czech, Mongolian, English, like, you were never doing that again. He's like, this is normal. No, you know, this. I'm like, dude, this guy needs to be like, he needs to be
quarantined.
Yeah, somebody needs to take a look at him and, you know.
Yeah. Even from a medical standpoint.
Yeah, he had this filthy bandage all over him, you know. He was not, it wasn't sanitary. It was gross, you know. And, you know, luckily some a British prison watch group came by. They happened to come by that day. And they're
kind of like inspectors?
Yeah, well, they were there to, like, they came and they were there to help. They said, we're here to try and improve the conditions of, we're an organization that tries to help improve the conditions of British prisoners locked up abroad. Can we talk to you? And I said, yes. You know I'm not British, right? And they're like, yes, but you're the only other dude here who speaks English. You know?
Right.
So then after they left, you know, I started talking to him. All of a sudden, the prison social worker showed up. Is everything okay? You know?
Well.
I mean, the first day I went there, we went to go get drug tested. There was a guy getting carried out of the cell next to me, screaming and spitting. He had tuberculosis.
Wow.
Yeah, there are guards like with face masks on. I'm like, what's going on with that dude? And all these guys are covering their faces. And they're like, oh, he just tested for tuberculosis. He doesn't want to go to the hospital. So he's like fighting and screaming. And like, I'm like, tuberculosus?
I haven't heard of that.
Like, that's some shit my grandma talked about.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
That's
right.
Some bad stuff.
He's got polio. Yeah, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. It happens in unsanitary environments. And that place was really unsanitary.
It's amazing, too. Another thing I thought was really interesting was you're talking about becoming a product of your environment. How, and I'm the same way. Like, you have one toilet. And you got two guys or three guys.
Yeah.
The what was the word you used? The poop prudishness goes
on. Yeah. I can shit with anyone right now. The president, your mother, like Mother Teresa, anyone. If I gotta go now, I don't care.
Did that take a while to get over that though? Because I can see that too, like wanting some privacy.
Yeah, well, there is no privacy there. I mean, even animals, when they take a crap, it's a self-preservation mechanism because you're vulnerable when mm-hmm. you're crapping. You'll see, like, you know, and animals don't just walk up and shit right in front of you most of the time. They go somewhere,
yeah,
you know.
Hide behind a tree or something.
Yeah, they're, like, chilling, you know, and humans are like that, too. But, you know, no. And also, man, we had no solid food. So, I mean, it was just ass blasters for a month, you know.
Which happens when you're in Europe anyways.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah. I would have paid good money for a case of Pepto-Bismol in there, something to lock me up.
Right, right.
It was rough, you know. But, yeah, go to prison for a little bit, or at least that one. You'll shit with
it. Get rid of the perverses. So how did you finally end up getting out of there after 34 days?
There was a journalist named Jonathan Crane who actually covered my trial. He's an English dude, really good dude, who covered for a English publication in Prague called the Prague Post. And I got a note from the prison thing that said, this guy wants to interview you. He speaks English. Are you willing to do it? And I'm like, yes. I want to speak to someone who can, you know, because all I'd done is talk to a couple of Czech people. You know, I want the people in America and England to understand what I'm saying. Because a lot of the information that came out of this whole thing was through, like, you'd see it. I've looked it up on the news. A lot of it was like Google Translate of like Czech news articles and stuff just completely screwed
up. Make any sense, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to be able to speak to this guy, and it's going to be printed in English, and, you know, people are going to know what's up. And so we went to walk, and then they were like, I got called into the office on the tier that day, and I'm like, I brought this piece of paper with me that was a request for this dude because I had to approve the request. And I'm like, what's the matter? Is he not here? Are you not going to approve my request? And they're like, you don't need that. You're going home right now. Pack your stuff. Pack your stuff. So somehow my third appeal on my bail had gotten overturned. And my lawyers, one guy was just camped out by the court waiting for it to get overturned before the prosecuting attorney found out again, because then he could have written a whole new request my incarceration saying, I need him for more questioning.
So he could have red taped you for
forever. Oh, that's all he did.
Forever.
He always waited until Friday to make an appeal. He waited till the last minute so I'd have at least two more days so the court wouldn't be able to see it. He just kept on grinding the wheels. I mean, I suppose he was doing his job, you know? He's a prosecuting attorney. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is also, you know, I was an American, and their perception of me is that I'm an American rock star dude. And if I leave and I go away back to America, I'm not going to come back to trial, you know? I can't really blame them for that.
But the one thing that you're right about, and I thought was very noble, was you said, like, I'm going to take care of this situation.
I have to.
No matter what happens, maybe you even say, I will prepare myself for 10 years in jail if that's what happens.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to leave this and run away.
Yeah. I mean, I said, you know, when they let me out, they took me to my lawyer's apartment in Prague, and we hid out and laid low until I could get a flight the next day. You know, because if the prosecuting attorney had found out, you know, boom, back in prison. And I did a little interview with a Czech TV station who my lawyer had a good relationship with, and they agreed not to air it until it's on the plane. And they said, will you come back if you get indicted? And I said, absolutely. You know, I have to clear my name, you know, and like, it was a really tragic situation.
Hey, let's talk about that. What you know, what exactly did happen?
Well, you know, there's...
I mean, as far as you can tell.
As far as I can tell, there were so many people coming up on stage. There is no clear memory of the young man who's deceased whatsoever. You know,
because the guy you wrestled down was not the guy.
No, he showed up to testify on my behalf. Wow. He showed up in the courtroom. His name was Milan, and he said, because all these people who testified, there are something like 30 different witnesses or something. Some of them said, no, he wasn't doing anything to anyone. He was just a normal show. And then some of them were like, you know, oh, he was punching people. He was beating people up.
Yeah,
saying I was beating people up, beating up 3 or 4 people over the course of the night, you know, right from the beginning, which is ludicrous because we showed video of the first half of the show in court. So you're like, that's not true. That's not true. Yeah, come on. You know, but he showed up and he was like, look, you know, I was drunk. I kept on getting on the stage. He told me, no, he wasn't rough. I didn't punch the guy. You know, I didn't even strangle him.
You didn't even miss a lyric. You were still singing the song.
I was screaming into his face.
Yeah.
he wanted to get up and I wouldn't let him up after a while. I had the mic and I was like rubbing it in his face, just screaming.
Yeah.
And I figured I'd freak him out and it did.
Right.
You know, and then he left. But to my memory, you know, that was the only person I had a physical involvement with that night. Otherwise, it was other people just running up on stage, you know. And a guard pushed a dude off stage. So, you know, I went back to court to face this whole thing in order to try and not only to provide some answers for the family of this young man who never attacked me in the press. They never came.
The family never did.
No. They just wanted some answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you blame them?
Not at all.
Their kid's dead. All they know is what they read in the paper.
And listen, the bottom line is, too, I think you said in the book, too, I mean, it's a horrible thing that one of your fans passed away at the show. I mean, that's terrible.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's nothing, you know, we never want our fans to get hurt, you know. A fan died in D.C., I heard. He had a heart attack after we played one time, and that felt horrible.
Yeah,
I mean, it had nothing to do with us. I think he was overweight. He came out into the lobby and died, but still, that screwed me up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, God, I died.
Of course.
Was the last thing he saw was us. He went to the lobby at 9:30, had a heart attack, and died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, no one caught him. I think that's what's happened. That's what happened, mm-hmm. you know, from deducing all the testimonies from looking at all the evidence, looking and thinking, I think that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have to take responsibility for that. You know, even though it wasn't a willful act and there was no security and all that stuff, but still,
it was just a terrible set of circumstances.
Terrible set of circumstances, and I can't say for sure that's what happened. But you know, also, I hadn't been drinking that night. If I'd been drinking, you know, I would have.
Right, because you don't drink anymore, but at the time you were.
Yeah, I didn't have a single drink until after the show, you know. And I know this because I found my journal from that day. And I say this at the end of the book. Musicians on the stage have every right to protect themselves, you know.
Absolutely.
And that. Protecting myself and my band, and I didn't beat anybody up.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't my mistake. My mistake was not just stopping the show because it was out of control.
Right.
You know, and I have to take responsibility for that. And I don't know what would have happened. A bunch of drunk metalheads. It's our first time in a foreign country, and. You know, I know bands that have had to fight audiences before, you know, they've trashed their bus, maybe they trashed the club, maybe they're riot, whatever. You know, it could have been ugly for all I know. But
what was at stake? Like what was the sentence that you could have gotten?
5 to 10 years. No time off for good behavior.
And you were
a minimum 5 years.
Would this have been in Czechoslovakia or would you?
Czech Republic, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you would have been, that's it. You're in jail for.
Adios.
Yeah. Adios. And you talk about that in the book, how you were prepared for this.
Yeah. I mean, dude, it's like, for me, you know, the big part of a lot of things was when I got sober, I really had to start looking at myself and like taking, you know, accountability for myself and everything, every action, you know. And I think that's something that you don't see enough of in today's world, you know, is like everybody wants to point a finger and blame somebody else or get somebody else to fix their problem, you know. Oh, why is this happening to me? You know, this isn't fair. Boo-hoo. The world isn't fair, you know. For me, if I felt ethically obliged to return and face it, you know, and if I had to do the time, I had to do the time. And if I had found out through the court process some information that, you know, maybe somebody had a testimony that jarred my memory, or there was some footage or something that's like, oh shit, I did try right. and mess this kid up, I would have had to say I'm guilty. And, you know, I would have done that time, because I can't, you know, look at myself in the mirror and call myself a good man if there's a dead fan of my band and it's my fault and if I don't take responsibility.
Yeah, what's the point of, you know, if you're going to kill a fan and get away with it, that's not...
Yeah, that's yeah, not, you know, why, I can't... I'd be drinking again, you know, and then I'd just blow my brains out or something, you know, because it's not the way I was raised.
Did you feel like, did you have any indication when you were in court, like you're going to be okay? Or did you not know until that verdict was read?
No. I was completely shocked.
Really?
Yeah. I thought what would happen was, what I thought would happen is that they probably wouldn't be able to find me guilty on the original charge, because the evidence, it was all just so much hearsay. And of course it's in a foreign country and their legal system is different than ours. I'm not quite sure, but the evidence was just ludicrous against me, you know,
the quote unquote evidence.
Yeah. It was stupid. But what I thought would happen is that they would not be able to find me guilty on that, but they would break it down to a lesser charge, maybe a negligence, and that I would probably do 1 to 3 years. I thought I would do at least a year.
Really? You were resigned, like, okay, I'm...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a good deal. It's better than 10.
Well, yeah.
You know,
it's... So you must have been fairly happy to hear that verdict, but still...
I mean, I don't know... I don't know how to describe it. When I was found not guilty, like, I'd already made up my mind... Like, no matter what they say, I'm not going to show any emotion. Because the fact of the matter is, it's a very serious, tragic situation. And, you know, A, if I'm, God, I got to go to prison, I'm not going to start weeping. My family's sitting right there, you know, and I'm not going to be a disgrace in the courtroom. Oh, I don't want to go to jail. Whatever, you know, I'll deal with it. But then if I'm found not guilty, I'm not going to, like, hop up and start celebrating.
Sure.
There's a young man's family sitting right there.
And they were right there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them were present. And, you know, that's insulting, you know? So when I heard, what happened was is that my translator was translating what the judge was saying as he read the sentence on the last day. And he's like... And it went on for a while, dude, because they had to read the legal code, this paragraph, according to the paragraph of blah, 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 blah. And my translator, who happened to be a little person.
That's right. You talk about her.
Is like speaking this stuff in my ear. And the judge says on the charge of paragraph 13, blah, 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 this charge has been removed against you. And I'm like, what does that mean, removed against me? And she goes, it means you are not guilty. And I'm like, okay. That's cool. All right, what else? You know, because I thought, you know, and my lawyers and I had discussed this. What's next? And she goes, I think that's it. And I'm like, you think? She's like, yeah, I think you can go home now. I'm like, I need better than I think, yeah. You know. And at that point, my American lawyer, who was there as a sort of advisor, and my lawyer, Jeff Cohen, leaned over and he whispered to me, he said, total exoneration.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. And like, I wasn't, I mean, the emotion I felt, I wouldn't call it like happiness.
Mm-hmm. Relief,
was,
maybe?
There was relief, but it was also just so much overwhelming sadness over everything that had happened, you know, because, I mean, it's just so sad.
Yeah.
You know,
did you have any contact at all with the family at all at any point in time?
You know, the family reached out, and I wrote about it at the end of the book. The family reached out to my family, my wife and my band, and told them, look, we're not having a witch hunt against this guy. We just want to know what happened. And then after I was found not guilty, they requested to meet with me before they went back to their village in the Czech Republic. And, you know, I'm not going to publicly discuss what we discussed other than the fact that they were just super cool to me and that they wanted me to, the last thing that, the uncle of the young man, he was the family's legal representative in court. He said, as he was leaving, he was just like, you remember, you can be a spokesperson for Safer Shows. And so that's, you know, immediately after, right before we went back on tour, I did a long blog post on my blog, Randonesia, called Be Carefully, where it's talking to fans and bands, explaining this stuff. You know, security, if you're in a band, make sure security is right. If you're a club owner, make sure you have trained security. Don't, you're playing with someone's life.
Right.
You know, these shows are crazy. And if you're a fan, know the risk you're taking. Even if you don't get on stage, even if you're just crowd surfing, it's cool. I mean, dude, I got, my forehead is uneven right here. I had 44 stitches at Milwaukee Metal Fest, where I staged over, screwed up during Brutal Truth. My head is split wide open. You know, could have died. If you're doing this stuff, you can get hurt, you know? So, like, it's just important for people to be aware of this type of thing, you know? It really is. And what happened to me, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, it was only a matter of time before this happened to somebody, you know? I mean, it was only a matter of time, and probably it'd be someone I knew. You know, because of the crowds we play to. Because I am not the only guy who's ever removed someone from stage.
Oh, yeah.
Like a million of my friends were like, oh, my God, dude, I was so thankful. Not that I was happy that it was you, but I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe that.
Right.
You know, it could have been me. I've done so much worse than just push someone off the stage. You know, you punch people out. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. You know,
jump off the stage and try and kick someone as you jump in the crowd.
Oh, yes.
Or whatever.
Oh, yeah, man.
That stuff happens all the time.
Yeah, right? All the time.
Maybe not as much anymore, though. Hopefully everyone will learn.
Yeah.
Guys in the bands and the fans from what happened with
club
you.
Owners, promoters, to tour managers, make sure they're, you know, our tour manager did. He said he had a security meeting because he's like, do we have security? Yes. Do you understand? Yes. They still didn't do it. You know, it was like, it was a nightmare. So it's important to me, you know, out of all this, to let people know this kind of thing can happen, you know.
Yeah.
Keep your shit dialed tight. And if you're a fan, know that your actions can have repercussions.
Last question. Is this something that, like, financially that it affected the band? Like, are you guys behind the eight ball as far as money that had to be spent repaying all the loans and stuff?
Man, it was, dude, I had six lawyers. All billing at the same time.
And flying to Czechoslovakia.
Flying twice.
To Prague, yeah.
To Prague. And twice because the trial got interrupted in the middle due to a witness. So I had to fly back for the trial twice. We had to stay there. I was there for a month. Dude, it wiped us pretty close to out. But, like, the fans, there was a legal defense fund. We auctioned stuff off. The fans bought stuff. The fans donated money. The fans made T-shirts and sold them and donated money. You know, friends of mine donated money. You're a friend of mine, Jamie Josta. Shout out, Jamie Josta. I love you, you know, because he's the realest. He's the truth. He went to Overdrive, made free Randy T-shirts. Sold them, donated money, you know. They kept us. We didn't go bankrupt, you know. We never missed payroll because we employ a lot of people.
Because you're a big-level band. I can say that.
We employ a lot of people. They're depending on us. We didn't go bankrupt, but, man, it's been nice to be back on the road and make a little money. We're just getting some back into the account.
Well, I think also there was such a huge, huge fan reaction to you. You really did become – like, I'm not going to say Mandela, but that sort of a unjustly imprisoned guy for the metal community. And when you got up, got out,
yeah,
people were very, you know,
yeah,
happy.
You know, I think it's also important, like, to look at the fact, and I was really glad that people supported me, but I, you know, it was important for me to go back to not just for them to say, screw this, this isn't right, but to go back and face it and say, okay, this is what happened. Now,
right,
you know, mm-hmm, this is the, to face this rather than just saying, screw you, I'm not going back.
Right.
To man up and let them be shown.
Yes.
That,
yeah,
I wasn't,
yeah,
guilty.
To show, exactly.
Yeah, I got to show.
Well, you did. And like I said, I mean, the new album's coming out, Lamb of God, Sturm and Drang, which I love. I've, yeah, heard that for years, but what does it mean?
It means storm and stress, roughly, in German. It was, you know, it was part of a literary movement in,
gotcha,
Germany. Like, Goethe was an early proponent of it. Really, the whole record has a theme of, and there's only two songs on the record that kind of deal with me being in prison. And I wrote those while I was in prison.
Yeah.
Then I wrote a 500-page book, so I didn't write a prison record.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a gangster rapper.
Yeah, right, you know, right, right.
Unlike some of you gangster rappers, I've actually been to prison.
That's right, right. You've got your street cred.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I'm not going to write a whole record about, yeah, that. But the whole record in general has a theme of how people react to stress. And that,
gotcha,
that Sturm und Drang kind of like, it, mm-hmm, kind of encapsulates that stressful feeling.
And the book is called Dark Days, and it's incredible. Like I said, I read a lot of books, and this is one of the best books I've read in a long time.
Thank you,
it's,
sir.
It's riveting. It's very emotional. It's sad. It's happy. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of great humor in it, and see, you made it on the other side, and you have a great attitude as a result of it, which a lot of people might not, so I respect that.
You can only do what you can do, you know. I hope that there's also, you know, I hope in the book, you know, some stuff that might help some people.
Jarl.
Jarl.
All right. Always great to talk to Randy Bly. Really good dude, and he's a very a heartfelt man. You could tell by what he said. He was going to take responsibility for whatever crime it was that he committed, whether he remembered it or whether he didn't remember it. Thankfully, he is out of jail. He's back on the road with the new Lamb of God album. He's doing a huge book tour. The album is out next Friday, July 24th. The band is kicking off their tour the same day, starting Friday the 24th in West Palm Beach, Florida. I believe that's with Slipknot, featuring Corey Taylor, who also was on the show promoting his book, You're Making Me Hate You. Corey and Randy together, two of the smartest guys I know. Randy's doing some book signings. He'll be at Book Review in New York City today, July 15th. He's signing at the Urban Farmhouse in Richmond, Virginia, his hometown, on Friday, July 17th. Finally, at Book Soup in Hollywood, California, Sunday the 19th. Go check him out. Say some nice words to him. He's a great guy. He's very, very cool. And this book rules. Dark Days. Go read it now. All right? If you can't get to any of the signings, you know where you can pick up his book. Amazon. And you know what to do if you pick up the book on Amazon? You do it through the Talk is Jericho Amazon links. You can find the TAJ Amazon links by going to podcast1.com. You click on the Support Our Show banner at the top of the page, then you hit the Talk is Jericho button, all right? I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A, and every time you make a purchase that way, Amazon kicks back a little money to the show to help us cover production costs. You get anything you want on Amazon. Randy's book, Corey Taylor's book, with the best title in publishing right now. Like I said, You're Making Me Hate You, a cantankerous look at the common misconception that humans have any common sense left. Yeah. And you get to get the Black Veil Brides DVD with my friend Andy Bierzak, that's Alive and Burning, new Tremonti album, Cauterize. Whatever you want or need, you know Amazon's got it. You go to podcast1.com, click on the Support Our Sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit Talk is Jericho button. And we still got a few more days left on the Y2J WWE Summer Tour. And when I say we, I mean that royalty. We, meaning I. July 31st, San Diego. August 1st, Ontario, California. August 2nd, Fresno, California. 15th, Detroit. 16th, East Lansing. Go to WWE.com to check them all out. I might even have some more dates coming up soon as well. Just a little taste for you guys for being such great Talk is Jericho listeners. You'll get the scoop here first. Also, some Fozzy dates left. July 24th at the Square in Kitchener, Ontario. August 8th, Festival and Friends in Hamilton, Ontario. August 9th, Heavy Montreal in Montreal. October 30th, the Kiss Cruise with the Kiss Navy going all the way to the Bahamas. Then the Cinderblock Party Tour continues November 14th. We are going to Hamburg, Berlin, Cologne, Reading, London, Manchester, Birmingham, Newcastle, Sheffield, all across Europe and the UK. Go to FozzyRock.com. Get all the information about VIPs to come meet us and go buy some tickets to come watch us. You will love it. And speaking of watching, you know what's going on. July 22nd, Sharknado 3. You know who's in it? Me. You know who the star is? Ian Ziering. And he's here. on Friday on Talk is Jericho to talk Sharknado 3 and to talk 90210 Steve Sanders. He's another great guest. I'm keeping it on a roll. I'll see you on Friday. And don't forget, what's the answer? What's the catchphrase? Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Stay tuned for the latest AP news headlines from Podcast One right after this.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with the Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.